we're like everybody else. We have the same body, we have the same human soul, we have the same selfishness, self-centeredness, like everybody else. We have two souls. One is self-centered and self-involved, and we're like everybody else. And we pick up the messages from the world around us, and we take on the self-image based on what the world tells us. That's one part of us. But there's another part of us that knows the truth. That's all else. It's all a fake. There's only one reality. The reality of God and Torah. So that is the struggle that the Jewish people are constantly going through. This struggle to assimilate. On the one hand, to set themselves apart from the entire world. First as an Ivri, then as a Yehudi. To be constantly set ourselves apart from the rest of the world and be real willing to put our lives on the line for it. And at the same time, when things are good, we somehow seem to slide back. Because we're playing out that same conflict inside ourselves. Between our own human soul and our own Jewish godly soul. So the key, the secret to winning that struggle inside ourselves is if we tap in to the 613 commandments. We live with those commandments. And we search even deeper to recognize how every one of those commandments affects us, our soul, and enables us to connect to God, to the godly reality. When we use the tools that the Torah gave us. The bonds, the ways to open up the channel of connection to God, that we can actually experience that as our consciousness, as our conscious reality. We have this as some deep, vague, hidden awareness which only comes out when we're pressed to the wall. When a Haman comes up and squeezes it out of us. But the fact is our job is to bring that out to our consciousness. And especially if we're living at a time when, according to all signs that we've been given in the prophets and in the teachings of our sages, through every single sign and indication of prophecy is being fulfilled with the description of every event which is meant to herald the Messianic era is being fulfilled in our time. Every one of them. And we're seeing a history unfold in front of our very eyes. Now is the time, more than ever, that we can access the godliness that's within ourselves and tap in, reconnect, hook up with our own godly center, with our own Jewish soul, by incorporating into our lives every one of those practices and every one of those studies, which again, on the surface, it just looks like a bunch of rules. But it's much deeper than that. It's that which enables us to experience a God-centered reality. And when we take on, and when we reconnect to our lifeline, today more than ever we're able to actually tap in and awaken that Jewish soul in ways that in previous generations were unheard of. When the Lubavitcher Rebbe came along and he said that we're going to wake up American youth, we're going to expose them to Torah, and they're going to get excited about it. Everyone thought he's crazy. Traditionally, the trend was the other way. It used to be everybody was religious, and people started drifting away. So what do you mean you're going to try to reverse the trend? Usually children are less religious than their parents. How are you going to get children to be more religious than their parents? And he said, don't underestimate the Jewish soul. Now is the time when the Jewish soul has never been easier to reach and connect and awaken. However, we still have one big major struggle. The big major struggle is but how does the rest of the world see us? When the rest of the world, when they tell us that we're ethnocentric, it bothers us. We feel like that's bad. When they tell us that, why do you set yourself apart? We somehow feel like, yeah, it bothers us. But the fact is that the rest of the world is telling us that less and less. The rest of the world, I said and gave a similar discussion. It was not exactly the same, but I spoke about the difference. It came up the difference between Jews and Gentiles. And it just so happened, unbeknownst to me, there were Gentiles in the room. And I saw that when I described the difference between Jews and Gentiles, the Gentiles had less problem with my description than the Jews had. The Jews, and what was bothering them? I could see what was bothering them. What's bothering them is not that they thought it was wrong. What was bothering them is, but what's everyone else going to think? So I said, here, you, talk to him. He doesn't. When the person introduced himself as a non-Jew, I said, yeah, talk to him. He'll explain it to you. You don't believe me? Talk to him. Today, the tremendous respect for people who stand up for what they believe in. When people stand up for what they believe in, when people proclaim their Jewish. The lesson from Purim is that when we proclaim our Jewishness, when we proclaim our separateness, when we proclaim our distinctness, but not in a haughty, arrogant way, our message is the opposite of arrogance. Our message is we're nothing and God is everything. Our message is not we're better than you. Our message is we're nothing and God is everything. That's our message. And it's our job to teach everyone else that. When that is your message, then as we saw in the time of Purim, that not only were the Jewish people at that time when they stood up, when they proclaimed their Jewishness, when they proclaimed, I know good and well who I am. And nothing anyone else could tell me about who I am is going to influence that awareness. I reject all the false messages that I got from the world around me. And I'm connecting to the true reality of who I am. So it tells us, what was the response? The response was they earned tremendous respect from the non-Jewish neighbors to the point that many of them wanted to convert. So we have nothing to fear in terms of the world around us today as Jews to embrace our Jewishness, to embrace, to allow our Jewish soul's expression, that Jewish soul that is at the center of the notorious Jewish guilt that somehow eats away at our guts. And we don't know how to, so this vague sense of something's off, something's wrong, and we don't know how to get in touch with it. That's our Jewish soul screaming, hello, remember me. When we get in touch with that part of ourselves, when we let it flourish, when we let it out, when we let it express itself in all its glory, then we don't earn the derision and persecution of our neighbors. Today, originally, Sinai meant that there has to be hatred and division. But ultimately, we were promised that it's going to turn around, that's going to change, and there's going to be acceptance and respect. And that's what we're seeing happen in our time. Far more acceptance and respect than any other time in our history. And that is, and again, we don't need the acceptance and respect to convince us to be true to ourselves. We're true to ourselves in the most challenging and difficult of times, but yet, how much more so in this time, when the freedom and the opportunities to live a Jewish life are so open and available to us, certainly we have to do, each and every one of us, our part. I have to do my part, and each and every one of us, to try to live a life that's true and consistent with the very natures of our Jewish soul, and through this, speed up the process in which all flesh shall see that the mouth of God has spoken, that the true reality, the true center of all existence is God Almighty Himself. Any questions?
Before any questions, we have tapes of previous classes from Rabbi Hamnick, one which speaks about the meanings of life and death. Rabbi Hamnick also is an amazing thing we have this week. He's going to be speaking to the law students of NYU, NYU being one of the best law schools in the country. This week, Hamnick will be speaking to the law students there. Unless you already enrolled there, you go there already, stop by yourself on Tuesday afternoon.
Or get the tape.
Or get the tape of it. So sure, it'll be tape, like always.
Okay.
Cynthia.
Question.
A question for the rabbi.
Actually, I did. Bless you. I was waiting to be asked. No, you are.
there was a certain slant about, I'm not in the mental health industry, but I've seen this from other rabbis too, against mental, and I know that in me...
I thought my father's a...
Well, exactly, and how Freudian that is, but anyway, I know that there are many mental health care workers in the Orthodox community, and that there's a lot of mental illness as it anywhere in the Orthodox community. So certainly you don't mean that this is a cure for the entire human soul to embrace Judaism. We're still going to have mental health problems. I mean, really.
Okay, that's a valid question. The question is, like, so paraphrase?
Try it.
The point seemed to be, of the discussion seemed to be pitting embracing Judaism as an alternative, as opposed to practicing good mental health.
Going to a therapist. Various
therapies. The question is that the Jewish world does seem to have its own share of mental illness and need for these various therapies. Okay. That is true. But the basis of therapy, I have seen time and again that there are Orthodox people who have become therapists when they embrace the secular view of the human condition as the premise, as the basis for their therapies. I've seen that they're far less successful than those individuals who have embraced the Jewish view of reality as the basis of their therapies, and rather have only borrowed techniques and ideas from the secular psychology. And in fact, this is what I do. I mean, technically, I have no alphabet after my name, but the fact is what I do in practice when I work with kids who are, I work a lot with kids who are, as I said, dropped out of society to one degree or another, and I have worked with kids who were locked up in mental hospitals after numerous suicide attempts. I've worked with kids who have been through any number of therapists, religious and not religious. I've worked with kids who have run the whole gamut of everything the mental health profession had to offer. They've been on Ritalin as children, and then they went on to Prozac or whatever it is, you name it. And when they get to me, after they've been through all that, I'm also using certain therapeutic techniques. But the basic premise of the foundation of what I do with them is that it's based on the fact that if they embrace the reality, again, especially with Hasidic teaching that goes into great detail, I've only given you the core essence. The fact is it goes into tremendous detail on nature and characteristics of the human soul and the Jewish soul. So when they work with this, I see people make amazing turnarounds in their lives that, like I said, again, they went through the whole, I usually get them, parents call me after they tried everything else. Because the fact that they're calling me means that the kid is already, has reached a very low position. And many feel that if they'll call me earlier, it's somehow a stigma. And I've seen time and again. Again, kids like that who have totally turned their lives around, totally straightened themselves out, who are solid citizens and are ready to take on anything in life. So I agree with you that there are concepts, ideas, and techniques that the therapeutic world has caught on to that are very valuable. And there are even certain instances where medical intervention is necessary. But even though, again, I'll tell you point blank, I mean, I've taken on cases where any expert I spoke to said, this person needs medication, I said, I'll do it without medication. And it worked. You have to know what? You have to know which cases. You can't go, you have to be experienced enough to know how, where to draw the line. But the fact is that the time and again, I've seen people whose lives were a wreck, a ruin, and again, they went through every form of therapy that's available, that's known to man. And when they got into the program of Judaism and and especially, like I said, Hasidic philosophy, which deals with the issues of, you know, the struggles, the internal struggles of the soul, it works. I just from experience, I know it works. A results-oriented Hasidologist. What can I tell you?
Carl Jung felt the same way.
I'm sorry?
Carl Jung felt the same way.
Okay, I understand. Everybody felt the same way, but the fact is that the numbers, okay, the truth is in the numbers, and the fact is that the people who, the fact is that, the industry is booming and blossoming, and the results are not encouraging.
I don't think that's true. I think the results are extremely encouraging.
Would you prefer that the Orthodox community never partake of psychotherapy?
No, absolutely not. I said they should. If the people would take the concepts, the ideas, the techniques, those things which are valuable, rather, and you know, it's rely for insights into the human soul on Torah, and borrow some of these the techniques on how to bring into your life and into practice and into how to bring out in people issues that they're not dealing with. There are a lot of things that you could borrow from these. The technology, the dynamic has to be Judaism. The technology is tremendously useful. And like I said, I use it all the time. But the dynamic is the Judaism is the Torah view of reality and of the human personality.
Well, you think that Orthodox people should be trained in techniques of psychotherapy?
This is one of my dreams, and God willing, it will happen.
Do you think that you could do a better job if you were trained more in that?
That's a personal question. Which
no, I'm just curious about yourself.
Which I'd have to think about before I answer.
Now, years ago, there was a statement that used to be bandied around in the late 1700s about the Bourbon kings. The Bourbon kings, they said, never learned anything new and never forgot anything. There's time for opening, you know, to new techniques and new possibilities. And just like you would not expect people not to go through medical treatments that have been perfected, there are things in psychotherapy, ways, techniques.
Well, absolutely. The technologies are definitely breakthroughs. The technological breakthroughs are tremendous.
What you said is new.
Is?
What you said is new.
Right.
The therapists don't know it. They don't so surely they have a soul. And they think that they are indulging. Somebody told them that's liberating. And they really don't have very great success. Cases.
They just came out.
They just came out with statistics which said that people who go to friends and relatives or pastors and rabbis for help do as well as people who go for therapy. One second.
Right.
He said equally as well. The people who don't go for anything do only 90% as well as the people who go for therapy. That was the statistics they came out with. I mean,